I then lived a life of squalor, pedophiles, no school, and free pills. When I finally escaped, I presented myself to advertising agencies as a self-educated, slightly eccentric youth, filled with passion, bursting with ideas. I left out the fact that I didn't know how to spell or that I'd been giving blowjobs since I was 13. Not many people can get into advertising when they're 19 with no education beyond elementary school and no connections. Not just anybody can walk in off the street and become a copywriter and get to sit around the glossy black table saying things like, maybe we can get Molly Ringwald to do the voiceover, and it'll be really hip and MTV-ish. But when I was 19, that's exactly what I wanted, and exactly what I got, which made me feel that I could control the world with my mind. I could not believe that I had landed a job as a junior copywriter on the National Potato Board account at the age of 19, for $17,000 a year, which was an astonishing fortune compared to the $9,000 I made 2 years before as a waiter at a ground round. That's the great thing about advertising. Ad people don't care where you came from, who your parents were, it doesn't matter. You could have a crawl space under your kitchen floor filled with little girls' bones, and as long as you can dream up a better chuck wagon commercial, you're in. And now I'm 24 years old, and I try not to think about my past. It seems important to think only of my job and my future, especially since advertising dictates that you're only as good as your last ad. This theme of forward momentum runs through many ad campaigns. A body in motion tends to stay in motion, Reebok, Chiat Day. Just do it, Nike, Wieden and Kennedy. Damn it, something isn't right. Me, to my bathroom mirror at 4:30 in the morning when I'm really, really plastered. It's Tuesday evening, and I'm home. I've been home for 20 minutes, and I'm going through the mail. When I open a bill, it freaks me out. For some reason, I have trouble writing checks. I postpone this act until the last possible moment, usually once my account has gone into collection. It's not that I can't afford the bills, I can. It's that I panic when faced with responsibility. I'm not used to rules and structure, and so I have a hard time keeping the phone connected and the electricity turned on. I place all my bills in a box, which I keep next to the stove. Personal letters and cards get slipped into the space between the computer on my desk and the printer. My phone rings. I let the machine pick up. Hey, it's Jim. Just wanted to know if you want to go out for a quick drink. Give me a call back, but try and get back real. As I pick up, the machine screeches like a strangled cat. Yes, definitely, I tell him. My blood alcohol level is dangerously low. Cedar Tavern at 9, he says. Cedar Tavern is on University and 12th, and I'm on 10th and 3rd, just a few blocks away. Jim's over on 12th and 2nd, so it's a fulcrum between us. That's one reason I like it. The other reason is because their martinis are enormous, great bowls of vodka soup. See there, I say, and hang up. Jim is great. He's an undertaker. Actually, I suppose he's technically not an undertaker anymore. He's graduated to coffin salesman, or, as he puts it, pre-arrangements. The funeral business is rife with euphemisms. In the funeral business, nobody actually dies. They simply move on, as if traveling to a different time zone. He wears vintage Hawaiian shirts, even in winter. Looking at him, you'd think he was just a normal blue-collar Italian guy, like maybe he's a cop or owns a pizza place. But he's an undertaker, through and through. Last year, for my birthday, he gave me two bottles. One was filled with pretty pink lotion, the other with an amber fluid. Permaglow and restorative. Embalming fluids. This is the sort of conversation piece you simply can't find at Pottery Barn. I'm not so shallow as to pick my friends based on what they do for a living, but in this case, I have to say it was a major selling point. A few hours later, I walk into Cedar Tavern and feel immediately at ease. There's a huge old bar to my right, carved by hand a century ago from several ancient oak trees. It's like this great big middle finger aimed at nature conservationists. Behind the bar, the wall is paneled in this same wood, inlaid with tall etched mirrors. Next to the mirrors are dull brass lights.